Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by OU Israel. This is being broadcast either on Israel National Radio or on OU Radio. In either case, I hope you enjoy the show. The show is for Parshat Chukat, recording and first broadcast taking place on Thursday, the 5th of Tammuz, 5767, on the secular calendar, the 21st of June. Our usual first order of business on Torah Tidbits Audio is the reciting of Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, a prayer on behalf of Jews in difficulties wherever they may be. That includes here in Israel as well as Jews abroad, in general or specific, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema Vakoli, Tihyena Oznecha Kashuvot, Lakol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmoria, Adonai Mia Amod, Ki Imacha Hasilicha Lamaan Tivare. Kiviti Adonai Kivetanafshi, Vilidvoro Hocholti. Nafshi Ladonai, Mishomarim Laboker, Shomarim Laboker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai, Ki Imadonai Hachesed Vaharbe Imo Fedut. Vehu Yifde et Yisrael, Mikol Avonotav. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanatunim Batzara Uvashivya Haomdim Bein Bayam Uvein Bayabasha Hamakom Yirachem Aleihem Viyotziyem Mitzara Lirvacha Umeafela Laora Umishibud Lagu'ula Hashta Ba'agala Uvizman Kariv Vinomar Amen. One of the verses always stands out for me, and that's Im Avonot Tishmarka. If God were to count sins, basically what it's saying. In other words, answer our petition to him based upon our merit. Hashem mi ya'amod. God, who would be able to stand up before you? It's you who have to be forgiving and you who have to help us out of these situations. And something to keep in mind. Before we get into Parshat Chukat, I want to bring up another issue. I mentioned that today is the 5th day of Tammuz. 2 days ago was the 3rd of Tammuz. The 3rd of Tammuz is the traditional date for Shemesh Begivon Dom V'Yoreach Be'emek Ayalon. That is a quote from the book of Yehoshua, chapter 10, where in a battle Yehoshua asked that the sun and the moon stand still, which means basically that time stopped, that he'll be able to continue the battle. And the book, the Navi, tells us that never before and never since has God responded to a human demand like that. And it's recorded as one of the well-known miracles of Tanakh. What I found noteworthy was that date, the 3rd of Tammuz, which began Monday night, coincided with the first opportunity, according to Minhag Yerushalayim, to say Kiddush Levana. I follow that Minhag, and therefore I said Kiddush Levana on the anniversary of the miracle recorded in the book of Yehoshua of Shemesh Begivon Dom V'Yoreach Be'emek Ayalon. Why do I say that that's noteworthy? Because the blessing of the moon, which is really a blessing of God in the presence of the moon, acknowledges that the sun and the moon go about their given tasks unceasingly with enthusiasm. We personify them in order to draw inspiration. Sasim usmeichim lasot ritzon konam. They delight and are thrilled at doing the bidding of their creator. And of course, the implied message is the sun and the moon do not really have a choice about what they do. They follow orders, so to speak, of God without a thought process. We, on the other hand, as human beings and as Jews, do have a thought process, do have free will. And therefore, we draw inspiration from what we perceive is the sun and the moon gladly and joyously following their instructions from God, and we say, Halavai by us. So too should it be by us that we will follow God's commands, follow the Torah, live a life of Torah with its values and its mitzvot in all realms as joyously and as unceasingly as the sun and the moon do their tasks. Specifically, on the day this year, this month, that the sun and the moon stopped their tasks, violated their rules, but still at the request of God. In other words, Yehoshua demanded or ordered that the sun should stand still and the moon, and whatever that means, it happened. And that's part of nature. Part of nature is that the laws of nature are followed under most normal circumstances, and what we perceive as miracle is a departure from the standard behavior of nature. But what this combination teaches me, and hopefully from me to others, is that nature itself is a great miracle, a series of miracles. And if we're talking moon, if we're talking sun, the fact that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west and gives us light and gives us warmth and provides energy and photosynthesis and all of those other things is a miracle of God's creation, which we thank him for every single day. HaMechadesh b'tuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'asei v'reshit. We say it in prayer. He who renews creation every single day. If there was one date, the 3rd of Tammuz in the year 2000, whatever it was, I don't recall, that the sun stood still and the moon stood still for a number of hours, then all the rest of the time, day in and day out, the moon and the sun are answering to God and performing through him the other miracle, the one we take for granted. Sunrise, sunset, a beautiful sunset gets a wow. A beautiful sunrise often gets a yawn and maybe a wow as well. But by and large, we take the normal operation of the sun and the moon for granted. And when we have an unusual phenomenon, and I'll tell you something simply between the standard operating procedure of the heavenly bodies and a miracle of the caliber of Shemesh B'Givon Dom, V'Yoreach Be'Emek Ayalon, in between you have a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse. It's all part of nature. But it is that which gets the wow, and that's which calls our attention to the heavenly bodies and who created them and the laws which he gave them and that they follow, except when he gives counter instructions. So it all fits together, in my opinion, very nicely. And the bonus was that if people went out on Monday evening to say Kiddush Levana, they saw right next to the moon, and I mean right next to it from our visual perspective, the planet Venus as an extra attraction in that piece of sky. And the next night, there was already a considerable distance between where the moon appears and where the planets appear. But on that night of the miracle of Shemesh B'Givon Dom, V'Yoreach Be'Emek Ayalon, and on that night of Kiddush Levana, at least according to Minhag Yerushalayim, I say it like that because there's another opinion that you have to wait till 7 full days from the Molad, the birth of the new moon, and that will be this Motzoi Shabbat, this Saturday night, that people will say Kiddush Levana, but because of the existence of that Minhag Yerushalayim, which I happen to follow, it coincided with the third of Tammuz enough to make an impression upon me to share it with you, the dear listeners of Torah Tidbits Audio. Now, at this point, before I get to Parshat Chukat, I was going to play a song, and the song that I was looking for was from Kiddush Levana, which I spoke about, and I was going to maybe do a Keshem Shani Roked Kenegdech, one of those, and put it in as a transition or an interlude between the discussion on the moon and Kiddush Levana and the miracles and Parshat Chukat. As I'm looking through my computer files of wave music and MP3, I had my assistant looking through physical CDs in my office, and I came across the following song. And I said, forget it, stop looking, this is the song I'm going to play. It is a song that combines maybe my favorite all-time pasuk verse. It's from Tehillim Kuf Dalid, Psalm 104, the famous Borchi Nafshi, which is said as the Psalm of Rosh Chodesh, and it's said by some on Shabbatot in the afternoon during the winter when we don't learn Pirkei Avot, and it is said at funerals and at visits to the cemetery. And among its many verses is verse 24, which says, Morabu Masecha Hashem, how many are your creations, O God? Kulam bechachma asita, each one you have created with wisdom. Mal'ah ha'aretz kinyonecha, the world is filled with your acquisitions, with the things that you brought into existence. It is a verse of several that relate to nature, and I believe give a healthy perspective of the admiration and the study of nature as being God's handiwork. This particular version of the song combined the phrase from prayer, which I mentioned before, that each day God with his goodness renews creation, and the combination of that verse and that piece of the prayer in a very pleasant song combined to be the ideal presentation at this moment. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Aesthetically, I think it's a nice song, and B, the meaning, actually I should say B, the aesthetics of the song, and A, its meaning and the point that it makes, that nature is a miracle, and miracles are only unexpected versions of natural miracles, and it's all part of the way God created the world and continues to run it today, as yesterday, and as tomorrow. Thank you. And now, finally, let's get on to Parshat Chukat. Now, yesterday I gave a mini shiur to the Torah Tidbits folders, which I would like to share with the listeners on the topic of Para Aduma, ritual purity and impurity. But I'll do that in a moment. Let me just share with you something I heard in a memorial shiur delivered last night. The person who gave the shiur is Rabbi Jeff Bienenfeld, a recent Ole from St. Louis, Missouri. He was basing his entire shiur on the teachings of the Rav, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik Halevi, Zichrono Livracha. And he started with a very interesting observation. The topic of Para Aduma, the red heifer, seems to be positioned in the book of Bamidbar in a very unusual place. It is not contextual. It follows the episode of Korach and the rebellion and the delineation of the tasks and privileges of Kohen, of Levi, responsibility of Yisrael, etc. And after the portion of the red heifer and the laws of ritual purity and impurity, specifically to contact with a dead body, we have the death of Miriam and the death of Miriam and then Aharon and various and sundry other things that continue. But observe the following. In other words, Para Aduma really maybe would be part of the book of Vayikra, maybe be in Devarim someplace. Its specific location is unique in that that which precedes it, according to most opinions, occurred up to the second year of the wandering in the wilderness, in the Midbar. From the death of Miriam onward, we're dealing with the 40th year. There is a gap of 38 years where we have very, very little information as to what occurred. We have in Parshat Maaseh a travelogue which describes the places of encampment throughout the 40-year period, but we don't have any detail of episodes that occurred during those 38 years. What fills that gap, or what bridges that gap, between the Torah up to and including Parshat Korach, and from the rest of Chukat and onward, because it's in the end of Parshat Chukat that we already arrive at the border of Eretz Yisrael, right before crossing the Jordan. That which bridges the gap is the topic of Para Aduma, specifically the purification process from one who becomes ritually impure or defiled to contact with a dead body. And the function that it serves at this point is to sort of give us a handle as to how to view and how to deal with death. Prior to this episode, you had the sin of the spies with a declaration that the people of that generation, males specifically, would die out over the course of the 40 years of wandering. Then you have the death of Miriam and the death of Aharon and then the death of Moshe Rabbeinu before entry into the land. Hold that thought. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Chukat. Perhaps you're wondering why I say hold that thought and then continue speaking right away. It has to do with the fact that for the first broadcasts, plural, of Torah Tidbits audio on Israel National Radio, it fits into their live stream, which means at 5 o'clock first broadcast, there's a news 5 minutes, followed by some commercials, then the first half of the show, 23 minutes, and I am instructed to submit an exact 23-minute segment. Then there's a news update and some more announcements and commercials, and then the second 23 minutes bringing you to 6 o'clock. When these two halves are stitched together for the archive, audio on demand, and when they are similarly stitched together, with perhaps an addition for OU Radio, you don't find the gap of time, which would render Hold That Thought a little ridiculous to say. And I used to actually pull it out when I put the pieces together, but I decided instead to explain it. With that explanation, let me just pick up the thread, which was Rabbi Bienenfeld at a memorial shiur last night, quoting the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik, that the Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the wilderness, had a predominant fixation, I guess you could call it, with death, having been declared that they would die out in the course of wandering of 40 years, having then towards the end witnessed not only the death of the men of that generation from age 20 and up when they came out of Egypt, but also of Miriam and then of Aharon HaKohen and then ultimately of Moshe Rabbeinu before they crossed the Jordan into Israel with Yehoshua. Because of that, it tends to get a little depressing for those people. And the laws of ritual purity and impurity give a certain perspective on death, which is meant to be constructive and, I don't know if you could call it exactly confidence building, but it definitely fits in to see the Torah's perspective on the ritual impurity of a dead body and of those who come into contact with it and the purifying nature and the atoning nature of the Para Aduma, its potion of ashes and other ingredients. Some of those details you will hear in the shiur that I gave to the Torah Tidbits folders yesterday. You will hear, as often you do, in the background, the clicking sound, which is a knife, the handle of which is used by many of the folders to sharpen the crease of the hard copy of Torah Tidbits, and as they drive it across the crease, it then flicks off the end of the tidbit and clambers onto the table. So that's the noise that you might hear, and I think it gives a little character to the show, because I want you to know that my two audiences for some of my Divrei Torah are the listenership of Torah Tidbits Audio and the cadre of volunteer Torah Tidbits folders. With that note, listen now to part, not all, almost all, but part of the shiur on the topic of Para Aduma, Tuma and Tahara, Kapara, atonement, sin, and death.
Rashi is very interesting in Chukat. In typical, the way we print Rashi, you've got pieces of the Psukim and Rashi's comment, and it goes through much of the first chapter in Parshat Chukat, Perek Yud Tet. Then at the end, Rashi says, that was my explanation of the words and the phrases in the Parsha. But he says, in essence, I want to share with you what Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan, who I don't know who that is, writes or is quoted in the Medrash on this Parsha, because it's very neat and it fits together very nicely with all of the details. Basically, it is that the Para Aduma, the red cow, and red does not mean red, it means gingy-ish, is the figurative mother of the Egel HaZahav. I remember the first time I saw not yellow gold or white gold, but pinkish gold. There is a kind of gold.
There is green gold. That you
I don't know about green, but I've seen... I don't know. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about red. Pinkish. Then it fit better with this concept of the Para Aduma relating to it. But that's not the only point. The Rashi brings from the Medrash the analogy to a king who tells his maid servant to clean up the mess that her son made in the palace. The son here being the Egel HaZahav. Not only that, he continues and it says various details in the way that it's prepared and details as to who prepares it. Why would God say to Moshe, speak to Elazar HaKohen, to take care of the preparation of the Parah Aduma. Aharon was still alive. And the answer is that the Egel HaZahav is called the Egel Asher Asa Aharon. It was the one that he was involved in, not Chas V'Cholila that he sinned in the Egel HaZahav episode, but he was involved. And just like the mother cow is being called to clean up the mess of her son, the Egel, the son, Elazar, is the one who is given the first command to prepare the Parah Aduma, which is seen as a kapara, an atonement, for Egel HaZahav. And you go through Rashi there, and lots of little details fall into place. What then struck me is not a little detail, but a major detail. Kapara for a sin is not the same as tahara for tum'ah, ritual purification of impurity. It's not a sin to be tummy. In fact, it's a mitzvah to be tummy. And sometimes it's a great mitzvah to be tummy. A Kohen Gadol and a Nazir, who are not even allowed to become tamei to the bodies of their closest relatives, are required to tend to the burial of a meit mitzvah. A meit mitzvah is a dead body which has no one to take care of it. So it's a tremendous mitzvah. The people who came to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar to say it's not fair that we should miss out on Korban Pesach, when that led to the command of Pesach Sheni, there are different opinions as to who those people were. Some say they were cousins of Nadav and Avihu, who died, and they were the ones who went into the Mikdash and took the bodies out and took care of them. That was 1 week before. Others say that they were the people in charge of carrying the Aron of Yosef, because the bones came out of Egypt with them. And we're not talking about a sin here. So fine, I understand the idea. It's almost like it's cute, but where's the sin in being tamei, so that the Parah Aduma, which is a purifier, yes, should also be an atonement for sin? Where's the sin? And I believe part of the answer, which I wrote and I'll share it with you, Baal Peh, as they say, is that the status of ritual impurity of a dead body is not an automatic given, if you think about it. In other words, what is a body? A body is the kli, the receptacle, that houses the neshama during a person's lifetime. The neshama is kodesh. The neshama is spiritual. The body is its receptacle, and that defines life in the way we know it. There's a famous image, I don't know where it is, of God saying to the body, you had better treat the neshama properly. Mashallah mahadavar domeh, what is this compared with? To a king whose daughter, the princess, falls in love with this peasant. And no matter how the king tried to keep them apart, he finally faced the inevitable that they were in love and they were going to marry. So he calls the peasant in and says, look, I don't expect you to treat my daughter, the princess, like a peasant would treat his wife. She has to be treated like the royalty that she is. The body can cooperate, so to speak, with Torah and mitzvot, and that's the way it treats the neshama properly. Because mitzvot and a Torah life is an aliyah for the neshama. If the body sins, now it's maybe not too fair to blame it on the body, because the body is nothing without the neshama also, it's a team. But if a person sins, then we attribute that to his physical side that shirked its responsibilities to provide properly for the neshama and is going against the neshama. Therefore, if we did not have sin at all, in other words, if every person or a person were to be perfectly sinless throughout his lifetime, which we already have a statement, it ain't no such thing. There ain't no such thing. What's the expression? Ain tzadik asher lo yecheta. There is no righteous person who hasn't sinned. But if there were a sin-free situation, then I believe the body, after the neshama leaves, wouldn't be avi avot ha-tuma, the ultimate level of tuma. Because then it would be like a klipa, the shell, the housing, which after its usefulness is to be discarded in a proper manner, which, by the way, it is even with all of the sinning. The body is still buried with respect and treated with respect. But it would not necessarily be set up by halacha, by the Torah, by God, to represent the ultimate level of impurity if it were not for sin. And therefore, the Parah Aduma, which represents the purification of the Tuma, is also a kapara for chet, for sin. The model, the symbol of sin on a communal level is chet ha'egel, 40 measly days after Matan Torah. Bnei Yisrael already were doing something which is either Avodah Zarah or borderline Avodah Zarah, or some people are involved, or a lot of people are involved, but whatever Chet HaEgel is, it was a very serious thing. And therefore, it's not just a Chet, but it represents the human and Jewish character that falls to temptation. And therefore, it's as if God declared the body to be tamei because there exists sin, and therefore that which purifies the body from contact with the tuma of a dead body is considered a kapara, an atonement for avera. Even though this person who is receiving the sprinkling of the ashes of the Parah Aduma, the potion, is not a chote that is being atoned for. He is a person who is tame, who is being purified. But the existence of that tuma, by the way, I think more than any other tuma, the tuma of a nida, or the tuma from contact with a dead reptile, or all other kind of tumot, different story. The tuma of a dead body is in a category all by itself. It's the only impurity that requires the Efer Parah Aduma, the potion of the Parah Aduma ashes. And it's the only one, therefore, that requires the aid of other people to rid you of that tuma. Person is tame, let's say a woman who is a tame from Nida, waits out the period, counts out 7 days, goes to mikveh, and of course there is a mikveh lady who is inspecting her fingernails and all of those kind of things, but she doesn't need that. She could go to a mikveh by herself and immerse, and she's tahora. A person who is tamei mate, which we all are, cannot possibly rid himself of that impurity by himself. There is no self-service station at the Beit HaMikdash where you put in your shkalim and it dispenses the ashes, the spritz of the potion of the Parah Aduma. It has to be a person. You think so? It has to be a person who is the one who sprinkles the ashes, the potion on the person, And it's a, and he has to go to mikveh also, and he has to wait out 7 days also. So part of it he has to do by himself, and part of it is the passage of time, and part of it is someone else sprinkling the ashes of the Parah Adumah. That's why, that's not why, but that's another point for the other mitzvah in the Parsha, besides the mitzvah of preparing Parah Adumah, is the mitzvah of the quality of the potion of the ashes of Parah Adumah being purifying the impure and defiling the pure. The person who shechts the korban, not the korban, the Parah Adumah, who burns its body, who collects its ashes, who prepares the potion, has to be tahor when he starts, and becomes tameh as a result. Not a 7-day tumah, not a tumah that requires the hazaah, the sprinkling of the potion, but he has to go to mikveh, he has to wash his garments, and he has to wait out the day that he's tameh for the rest of the day. That, I'm drifting off to another direction now, but it's another analogy which I always like. When a person is in fell into a pit and can't get out on his own, he calls for help, and a passerby is going to help him. The passerby happens to be a person wearing a brand new white suit that he just bought, and he likes it very much, and it's sparkling and clean. To help this person, he's going to have to lie down on the ground, extend his hand into the pit, and say, "Grab on and I'll pull you out." Now, to be sure, he is not going to be, after this experience, he's not going to be in the same dire straits as the guy that was in the pit and can't get out. Picture the comedy scene in a slapstick way of someone pulling someone out of a pit and being pulled in. And the next person, you know, so that doesn't help anything. You know, one's out and one's back in and you just keep going in. Here, you help the guy out of the pit, which he couldn't have done without your help, but your white suit is dirty and it's going to have to go to the cleaners. That is part of the involvement that we each have with he or she who is tamei mate. It becomes not just a personal thing, it involves at least the person in charge of sprinkling the potion. And that has a statement also, that this kind of tumah, if it is truly a kapara for the cheto egel, then we're talking not just sin, but communal sin. And when you hear communal sin, the antidote to it, the atonement for it, is communal mitzvah and communal unity in a proper Torah sense, not in a negative sense. So that's, you know, some of what I feel about this. Now, I also have this other idea that I really would like to pin down where it's from, but just take it as a half-baked idea. Once upon a time, a long time ago, God's intention, so to speak, and whenever we speak of God's intention, we are speaking of him in human terms, because he is not surprised by anything that we have done. He knows what's going to happen. But it's like his original intention was to create human being as a perfect counterpart of his on earth, to become a partner with God. And the intention was that he would live forever. When Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz HaDa'at and was excluded from Gan Eden and contact with the Eitz HaChayim, he was destined to die. Now, it happens to be that Adam didn't die till 930 years after he ate from the tree, even though God said to him, "You may eat from all the trees in the garden, with the exception of the Eitz HaDa'at Tovara, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, for on the day that you eat from it, you shall die." So how do we understand that he did die, but only 930 years later? We can understand it as a decree of death. Before that, there wasn't going to be death. There was going to be eternal life. So that by eating from the Eitz HaDa'at, based on the words of God, for on the day that you eat from it, you will die, meaning there will be death for human beings. Even though in Adam's case, because of tshuva and rachamim, he lived 930 years. Then, and again, I'm not sure where my sources are for this, but I didn't make this up. Then, many generations later, God said, I'm going to try again. But I'm not going to try with all of humanity, because I've seen the generation of the Mabul, and I've seen the generation of the Tower of Babel, and I've seen the deterioration through the generations of the fight that Avraham Avinu had. I'm going to try again with the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, with Bnei Yisrael. And I'm going to give them the Torah, and I'm going to give them the opportunity for that original partnership which I wanted with all people. And we botched it again. 40 days after Matan Torah was Chet HaEgel, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kivyachol said, again, it didn't work. I offered them eternal life. But now, death will be part of life, as morbid as that sounds, or as ironic as that sounds, it is. And that makes Chet HaEgel that which brought back to the Jewish people the potential of death. And that's what makes Efer Pora Aduma, and the Pora Aduma, as a kapora for Chet HaEgel.
The shiur went on a little bit longer, but I'm going to stop it here in order to conform to the time restraint. And it gives me really enough time to wish you a Shabbat Shalom and to say, Lehishtameah.